Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined by Robert Seidman, who runs the Sports TV Ratings website and Twitter account, and Patrick Craigs, who is a former executive at Fox Sports and now is a consultant in the sports media industry. Welcome, gentlemen.
Happy to be here.
Good to be here.
Okay, great. So let's start off with WWE ratings. I mean, WWE's new TV deal. It was reported by a variety of outlets that they have agreed in principle to move SmackDown from USA to FS1 beginning next October, and that SmackDown will be moving from Tuesday to Friday night. It seems, although it isn't 100%, the Hollywood Reporter has said that USA, which is owned by NBC Universal, is pivoting to focus on retaining Raw. I don't know that they have definitely retained Raw yet or whether it could possibly go to Fox Sports or somewhere else, but I think we should do this conversation on the assumption that Raw is staying on USA. Otherwise, we'll get into a million different hypotheticals. Patrick, you worked in rights acquisitions for Fox for a number of years. What was your reaction when you saw that they picked up SmackDown for 5 years at a cost of $200 million and a little bit of change per year?
Yeah, I thought it was a great maneuver. I mean, they're gonna execute upon their new strategy. As I said a couple times, you've got to give them a lot of credit for really just pivoting fast and hard and executing. They know what they want to be. They know where they want to go. And they're setting about doing it. They're basically going to get a year-round programming in prime time for the broadcast television network that is going to be very cost-effective when you count in what the opportunity costs of entertainment development costs and risks are. So they settled an entire night of programming. It fits into their strategy. By moving it to Fridays and launching it in October of next year, they'll be able to promote via Thursday Night Football. You know, there'll be some scheduling, I think, issues a couple nights that they need to figure out, but that's a good problem to have in general. I think it's a big move. What I'm really curious about is, do they get access to the WWE library? How does that all work? Can they use that on FS1 or not? But overall, I think it makes complete sense in the strategy, and I think it was a great acquisition.
Robert, what were your thoughts when you saw the news of the deal? Now, I don't think it totally came out of nowhere, but there's a difference between hearing that Fox is interested and then seeing that billion with a B number.
My first thought was that you were finally going to get your wish, Ryan, that you've been touting that you thought that maybe SmackDown could outdraw Raw even on USA, and I think you've pulled back on that as have the numbers. But now that's really a very interesting discussion, at least to me. Like, what is the bigger property once SmackDown is on the broadcast network? So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what WWE does. Like, does this mean like they will share more of talent between the two shows? How's that all going to work? And like Patrick said, you know, what are the library elements, if any, going to be?
Yeah, so you mentioned the talents on the shows. Now, for the last couple of years, Raw and SmackDown have been mostly distinct brands, and their performers were on a total of 4 or 5 different pay-per-views per year together, but for the most part, the pay-per-view events were either Raw-branded or SmackDown-branded. They are now starting with the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which is in Chicago this June, are moving to a schedule where all of their pay-per-views are co-branded, and I think that that makes some sense that they're going to have some more talent sharing between Raw and SmackDown, because if one of the shows is on USA and one of them is on Fox, there's going to be a lot of quibbling over who has more hours of the top talent. There's probably 5 or 10 real difference makers on WWE's roster. For example, John Cena, Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar, people of that caliber. And if USA or Fox perceives that one or the other is getting an unfair advantage, given that the stakes they're paying for it, the easiest way is to split the baby and say, okay, John Cena is going to have a feud that is on both shows. As far as the library goes, I agree, that would be fascinating if FS1 were able to air classic wrestling once a week on Saturday morning, and they could do old WCW shows or shows from the Attitude Era. That would be a lot of fun. Patrick, one thing that I suggested in my piece yesterday is that NXT, which is WWE's developmental league, could find a spot on FS1. And with some promotion, I feel like that could draw 1 million viewers a week, which isn't nothing. Just on a hypothetical level, could you see a fit there?
Hypothetically, yes. I mean, the devil's in the details there. 1 million viewers is a lot for that number, and for any kind of non-live programming. So, so 1 million's a lot. It could work. The question is, where do you put it, and what are you paying for it? And we haven't heard anything about that. But it's not a bad idea, and I'm sure the Fox Sports guys are thinking about the best way they can lever all the content to the WWE now that they've made this commitment to it. So if they can find a good place for it that makes sense and it fits into the strategy, sure. One thing to pivot to real quick on the whole talent and how the storylines work and whether the two networks are going to share content of performers and things like that. You know, it sounds an awful lot like arguing about the quality of games for the NFL or Major League Baseball on your network. So you can figure that out now. Instead of Cowboys and Redskins, where's that at? Now it's two wrestlers, and how many appearances are they having on each network? But you can figure it out. But that whole, you know, what the quality of content issue is, I think both NBC/USA and Fox have an expectation that they're going to get very high quality investment from the WWE. So how they balance that out could be very interesting.
I want to ask Robert this first, and then Patrick can chime in. The one thing that hasn't been discussed yet, as far as I've seen, that is an interesting hypothetical. I mentioned there's 4 or 5 big pay-per-views a year, and maybe 7 or 8 kind of second-tier events. So about one a month. It would be fascinating to me if they could 1 year try and see what would happen if they put WrestleMania or the Royal Rumble on Fox Broadcast Network on a Sunday night. I would be really interested in seeing how many viewers it would get. Robert, if they aired WrestleMania, a 6-hour event on Fox Broadcast, what do you think that the average would be on a Sunday in April?
So is that the only way to watch it? So it's not on the WWE OTT, and it's not a pay-per-view. That's the only way to watch it?
Yeah, exclusively on Fox.
That is a really interesting question. I don't have a good feel for it, but I'm going to say 8.5 million is the number that I get.
And no, I think it would sound higher than that. I think it would definitely be double digits. If they draw 3.5 million for a normal episode of Raw, if they had WrestleMania and they knew The Rock was going to be on it, for example, I think they average double digit millions. What do you think, Patrick?
Boy, I think that's way too enthusiastic. I like Robert and Robert's number a lot better. Look, the biggest problem with that idea is, can you get the affiliates to clear the 6 hours? I think it's an interesting idea, but I don't know if the business model of the WWE allows it to do that. And it's interesting, though. You could do it from an advertising, you know, from the revenue that the WWE would forego, right, on a pay-per-view, Fox isn't going to probably cover that in assets. Maybe they could. My guess is that those pay-per-views are very, very profitable for the WWE. So that's an interesting idea. I just don't know if it actually works for everybody in execution. But if you're looking for a stunt to draw a lot of attention to the WWE and to Fox, or, you know, in general, you could pull it off. And if you sat down and planned it out as kind of a summer event, it could make some sense. You just got to, you know, that's got a lot of moving parts to it.
Well, okay, so maybe instead of the six-hour show, we do the four-hour, five-hour, whatever, SummerSlam. And so WWE's business model has become less reliant on pay-per-view gate as they move to their over-the-top WWE network, which costs about $10 per month. So I don't think that they would lose subscribers over a decision to put one big event that would have been on the network on TV per year. But I do understand what you're saying as far as compromising the business model. So let's move on to
Ryan, can I ask Patrick? So Patrick, if they were able to pull that off, like, what do you think is the marketing value, not just for Fox, but for the WWE brand? How much value is there just as a, you know, let's market the crap out of this and get it a wider bit of exposure?
I think that probably, you know, look, if you're going to do 8.5 million viewers on broadcast and you're going to say that you're a property worthy of that, right, to put your best content on there on the best distribution system available, which is broadcast television, I think that right there is just, you know, another, you know, move forward for the WWE that tries to position itself in the marketplace. Remember, the WWE is a lot different than a lot of other sports entities in the sense that it's a publicly traded company. So all of this is marketing that's very, very good for it. They have a share price that they need to worry about every day. I don't think it affects their over-the-top product. I mean, the best way to figure it out would be for the WWE to do it incrementally to everything else they're doing, right? And then promote into something else. But it could be a heck of a stunt if you could get all the pieces in place. And, you know, Fox is the type of company that's up for things like that. I just, you know, it's really got to be good when they do it, right? I mean, it's got to be like, everybody's going to pay attention to this. So, you know, it's even bigger than the Friday shows. This is a huge thing. So it's got to be really, really good. And so the WWE's got to put a lot of creative energy behind it. And that, you know, what the bandwidth is for that is always the question.
One other thing that I had forgotten about, I was going to move on, but the Deadspin did a good piece over the weekend basically arguing that Stephanie McMahon deserves a lot of credit for really improving the external perception of WWE's brand over the last several years. Because I remember when the rights were up in 2014, there was a lot of excitement in the Wall Street marketplace that because these live rights were exploding, that WWE would be a major player in that, but a second bidder never materialized. Now, I know Fox has pivoted its strategy away from entertainment and towards live events, and so WWE got lucky in a sense that this time there wasn't a very enthusiastic second bidder, but I don't, as recently as even 3-4 years ago, I don't think that we would ever really be talking about WWE as a broadcast television entity. Robert, have you noticed, as someone who isn't a core viewer of WWE, that their brand just seems to have a lot less bad will than it used to?
Not really, but in the prism that, like, I view the WWE fans through, which is mostly people in the media like yourself, everyone has already and always been kind of very enthusiastic about it. So I've seen a trend of interest, sort of general interest in WWE, and it looks like it's growing to me. But in terms of, like, you know, did it seem like a worse brand before? It didn't seem worse. It just seems like it's getting bigger now.
Well, pro wrestling is a cyclical business, and right now, their viewership has been in a constantly declining state over the last 15, 16 years. So I was really surprised that they were able to really generate this type of bidding war at a time when their viewership, comparatively to the late 90s, early 2000s, or another boom period with Hulk Hogan, et cetera, in the mid 80s, that right now is when they were able to pull off this coup.
Yeah, but
what factors do you attribute to that, Patrick?
Well, Robert, you want to take this first, and I'll follow up on you.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
So look, Ryan, I think you're evaluating the wrong way. The trend isn't what it was before and what it is now. The trend is, what is it now in the context of everything else? It's not, you know, it's number one, number two show on television on pay TV when it shows up. Any property that can get 2.5 to 3.5 million people to show up regularly has value as the increased fractionalization has occurred over viewing. You know, the media usage universe has expanded, but it's spread out over a whole lot more outlets. So if you can draw a concentrated audience continually, especially if it's segmented in some way, you have enormous value. So the WWE is at the right place at the right time. They have a huge, loyal audience that shows up consistently in an era where everybody needs engagement, and they need to be able to separate themselves and differentiate themselves from the pack. It has an enormous amount of value because of that. And then that dovetails with the shift from Fox and strategy to create a real opportunity for them to create value.
Robert, do you have anything to add to that before we move on?
No, just that the relevant comparison really is right now, and not what happened 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago, or really even anymore last year. It's right now, and the WWE, the Raw, and the SmackDown, those 5 hours are very, very, very strong relative to the field, both in terms of what USA has been putting it on its own network and relative to its competition during those times.
Okay, so let's move on to the NHL rights, which are up in a few years. I think all three of us thought that Fox would be a player in probably trying to pry part or all of the package away from NBC, as well as to ward off ESPN, who I think we'd expect would have interest in it as well. Patrick, does WWE, could that be additive to the NHL, or does airing it on Friday nights and committing the type of money that they did, does that hurt Fox's chances to make a bid for the package?
No, it doesn't hurt it at all. If by additive you mean, could they collect is there still room for the NHL? There's plenty of room for the NHL. A lot of that content would end up over on traditional pay TV, but there'd be opportunities to place it on broadcast, I would think. But the $200 million that they're paying every year for the WWE, that's not, you know, remember, they're eliminating a lot of costs with this shifting strategy. So they've got the money to acquire content, and they're doing that. A lot of people are missing that. They've moved numbers around the balance sheet, and now there's opportunities to acquire things. So the NHL is still a wide open possibility for them, and I expect they'd take a very, very serious look at it.
Do you have anything to add to that, Robert?
No, although I think NBC is going to try to hold on to that more than some people think it will. I mean, I don't see it as a fait accompli that that's going to just leave NBC Sports.
Okay, and
I agree with that, and I think that is going to be a. You know, NBC will try to do everything they can to keep 100% of that. I agree with that.
One other thing that's interesting is the UFC. So ESPN, as we talked about on Robert's podcast a couple weeks ago, acquired kind of a tranche of the UFC package. They're going to put about 10 to 15 fights a year exclusively on the ESPN Plus over the top app. And they also acquired some library rights and re-airs and pay-per-view rights. At this point, if you guys had to guess, do you think the rest of the package goes, do you think it stays with Fox, or do you think it goes to NBC? Robert, you first, then Patrick.
So if I had to guess just based on what I know, my guess would be that Fox would hold on to the rest.
Patrick?
Yeah, I think Fox is going to keep at least a majority of it. I think it's possible that some of the content, maybe 30% of it, ends up somewhere else. Maybe you know, and this is me making this up, trying to take a look at the landscape, and also in conjunction with some conversations I've had with some other folks in the business. I mean, I think you know, Turner is an opportunity, but this is really a great opportunity for somebody like an Amazon to come in. They could get, you know, 6 to 8 fight nights, especially in the fourth quarter when Fox is really jammed up with programming. They could acquire it for a reasonable price. And the advantage to Endeavor of splitting it up is that they probably can get more for it. You know, Fox is, you know, probably going to want to pay $200 million to keep most or all of what they have. They got $150 million from ESPN. Ari said publicly he wants $450 million. Well, if you can get another network to come in for $100 million, or even better, Amazon to come in, then that makes sense. And don't forget, Amazon is now selling UFC pay-per-views inside their ecosystem. So this is a real opportunity for a streamer to come in and get a right number of fights for them to experiment with. And for Endeavor, I think what they really care about is hitting that $450 million number. If you know about how they borrowed the money to buy the UFC and how that worked with the FTC, and it's really important they hit a number north of $400 million, I think, to them. So, you know, I think they probably can get that number by splitting things up. And so I would expect Fox to keep most of it, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see another network get a small part of it, and then Endeavor hits their goal.
Question, Ed. How much does it help? Would it help UFC viewership if SmackDown is on from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time, and they could promote, okay, this main event is happening this evening on UFC Fight Night on FS1 after we go off the air?
You mean like a late night fight night on FS1 on a Friday night?
Well, okay, so if FS1 keeps the UFC rights, then WWE and UFC are going to be going head-to-head for a couple hours. But what if they saved like a good main event for between 10 and 11 p.m. on FS1 that could be promoted on SmackDown? How much help would that be?
Well, I don't think it has to be on the same night. If SmackDown is going to be on Friday night, there's only some amount of UFC content there. And typically, you know, the overwhelming majority of the live fighting is on Saturday nights, right?
Okay.
That's one of the reasons why Fox has some issues in the fourth quarter. They're really jammed up in the fourth quarter with a lot of high quality content. It's like I would say, it's a good problem to have, but you know, there's a lot of traffic, there's a lot of getting the trains thrown on time problems in October and November. So, but you know, from a promotional, you know, bridge across the schedule, across the distribution platforms, it's great. UFC has always said, and I think they're right, that wrestling is additive. You know, it's an additive kind of system, right, to combat. So you've just got a great promotional vehicle. In some ways, having SmackDown on Friday night and having a fight, UFC fight night on Saturday night on either Big Fox or FS1 is great because it's the right promotional vehicle. So I think it works terrific from a holistic sense, right? I don't think you necessarily have to have anything on the same night. It feels, you know, that's a lot of content, right? People don't commit to 5-hour blocks of content typically. But if it's night to night, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Saturdays are so jammed up. Everybody wants to be on Saturday. That's where a lot of the action happens. Having anything that promotionally clear the clutter out and take a target audience and make that line, you know, straight from point to point helps. And I think SmackDown on Friday nights does that for UFC fighting on Saturday nights.
Okay, let's move on to NBA playoff ratings. So even though the last couple weeks have not had a lot of exciting games because they've all been blowouts, the ratings have been pretty strong. Austin Karp of the Sports Business Journal had a tweet that said, through the first two rounds, NBA ratings were cumulatively up 2% year over year when you factor in ABC, ESPN, and TNT. And I'm going to read from the Washington Post these numbers of the conference finals. Game 1 of the West Finals last Monday night between Warriors and Rockets averaged 8.8 million viewers, TNT's most watched West Game 1 ever, a 38% increase from TNT's coverage of East Game 1 in 2017, and it was the most watched show on all of television during that time. Warriors Rockets Game 2 on Wednesday averaged 7.5 million viewers. This was up 41% versus Celtics Cavs on TNT last year, up 16% on Game 2 of Warriors Spurs on ESPN last year. Game 1 of Cavs Celtics was highest rated East opener since 2015 and most watched since 2014. Ratings for Game 2 of Celtics Cavs were up 71% from the comparable game the year before. These are gigantic numbers. What would it be if they weren't blowouts? Robert, you first.
I think it has a lot to do with the matchups. I mean, particularly like trading the Raptors for the Celtics is a big win for the Eastern Conference Finals, just by itself. And to me, I'm really more interested there that series looks like now it's going to go at least six games, which at this point is a windfall because some of the series are just wrapping up very, very fast. And it looks like Houston Golden State could only go five, maybe. And so to have a six or seven game series in the East, I think that would be tremendous. But I mean, I think it's very helpful that Boston is in the mix this year, and that they're a team that has some good national juice. I think outside of like the recent Cavs Warriors good finals ratings, you know, Lakers Celtics was the prior best. So the Celtics do have some good national juice. It's just more good news for the NBA, and it is good news. I think that series is going to go at least six.
Pat, what do you think?
Well, look, can we just stop with saying that, you know, sports is like in trouble, and particularly it doesn't make sense to spend money to acquire live engaging programming in an era where it has the most value. I mean, right now you're seeing it, right? And that NBA deal, which has been criticized, you know, that should really pretty much stop. But dovetailing exactly to these NBA ratings, you know, these are great numbers. I think they are driven a lot by the stars and the matchups. I think people want to see these matchups, and I think they're interested in the storylines and the Cavs and the Warriors maybe getting together again. But I would also say that, you know, next year you may not get this right mix, so they'll go down a little bit, but it doesn't change anything. People get very, very fixated over these year-to-year changes, right? And they matter, but they're not the whole picture. Networks and businesses, you know, plan for multi-years. And things go up and down within some kind of range, right, when it comes to the viewing delivery. Like Robert said, you know, if you have a Canadian team, U.S. TV ratings are going to be impacted by that. It doesn't make the matchup any less exciting or any less competitive, but, you know, there's just a math issue here because that city is not contributing any viewing. But, you know, it's next year, they'll probably go down some. But it won't change the value that the NBA brings to Turner and to ESPN, which is, you know, pretty significant. I mean, this time of year is the right type of year to have this kind of content across multiple nights. We're about to enter a stretch now. We're all the way through the Memorial Day weekend. You know, the NBA and the NHL are probably going to dominate a significant portion of all the sports viewing. We've got some big auto races this weekend, but in general, those two sports are going to dominate. And you really, it's worth an enormous amount of money to be in business and have this content. So, you know, I everything's confusing, everything's fractionalizing, but, you know, these sports, the NBA, the NHL, they provide a lot of content that people want to see. They provide storylines and drama that has to be watched real time. And they're worth every penny that people are allocating to them, whether it's the NBA or the WWE. It's just engaging, and it's worth the money.
Anything we didn't talk about that you guys think is interesting in the news or media or whatever? It hasn't been that long since we talked, but interesting stuff happens all the time.
So I just want to add, I mean, Patrick kind of brought this up in regards to, you know, Fox promoting, whether it's wrestling or UFC. He brought up the notion of, you know, sort of a holistic platform. And he didn't even get into, you know, the Thursday night football and Sunday football promotional opportunities that they'll have to promote all that stuff. So, and World Series, exactly. So I just think, you know, the promotional landscape for some of that stuff, particularly with, you know, with Fox largely getting out of the entertainment programming business, it's going to free up, you know, them to promote a lot of that stuff during the games. It's just going to be very interesting to see, like, if that promotion actually helps build these properties even bigger.
Pat, what about you?
Yeah,
I mean,
not really. I think I'll be paying attention to this weekend, where I want to see whether the Coke 600 from Charlotte and the Indy 500, how the ratings shake out there when it's all said and done. That could be very, very interesting to me. Auto racing is a very, very interesting point as a televised sport in an era where, you know, they still deliver significant viewing. You know, there's a lot of changes going on. So I'm really very interested to see, you know, who comes out number one. I would expect it to be the Coke, but you know, I'm really interested to see how this year's Indy 500 and Coke 600 will be each other.
Okay. Anyways, I appreciate your guys coming on. That's Robert Seidman, SportsTVRatings.com. Patrick Crakes, former head of programming at Fox Sports, now consultant in this sports media industry. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Take care, guys.
Bye. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Such turned strange.